have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I've bought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I hate going out in the storm. But as long as you hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Let it snow. Let it snow, let it snow.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. I hope everyone's having a wonderful Christmas time and hope your weekend is going fantastic. Tonight we have two great mysteries for you. We begin with a wonderful episode of The Whistler, which, if you've listened to this program before, you know it's one of my favorites. And the second episode we have tonight is from the Suspense series. If anybody ever saw a great movie back in the 50s starring Jimmy Stewart, it was entitled Rear Window. It had a very mean Raymond Burr, who later became Perry Mason. Well, anyway, tonight we're going to listen to a wonderful story for our second episode from Suspense called The After Dinner Story, and it's by Cornell Woolrich, and Woolrich was the one who wrote the script for Rear Window. I think you're really in for a wonderful treat. Well, I could go on and on, but I think you want to listen to the great masterpieces of yesterday. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com, and I'll be sure and answer you. Have a fantastic weekend. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Tonight, phone call from death.
Ellen always seemed to lose out with the men she set her cap for. And who can say what emotion plagued her now that she could no longer be called a young woman? She didn't show it, of course, even when men came to her about their troubles with other women, like Glenn Reed.
It's maddening, Ellen. What am I going to do about her?
There's nothing much anyone can do when a girl falls in love.
Don't say that. She's not in love with Paul Carroll. She can't be.
Glenn, pull yourself together.
I'm sorry.
I know what Sheila means to you, but you can't deny reality, Glenn. The fact is, Sheila's met someone else, and there isn't anything you can do about it.
2 months ago, she was going to marry me.
I didn't know that.
Well, not a definite promise, but until Carol came along... What has she told you about him?
Glenn, you can hardly expect me to tell
you
what...
You've got to tell me, Ellen. I've got to know.
I don't think I have to violate a confidence for anyone.
But you said she's in love with him. How do you know? Did she tell you?
Yes, she told me.
I don't believe it.
Really, Glenn, if you're going to behave this way...
I know I'm a fool. But, Ellen, if you knew what all this is doing to me...
I think I know. Ever since Sheila met Paul Carroll, she's been infatuated with him. And I can understand why.
But why can't she see her money's made a hit with him, too?
Oh, Glenn, lack of money doesn't mean anything to Sheila. I've certainly never been wealthy. Why, the jobs I've had. Dime store clerk, telephone operator, stenographer, and now secretary. Yet Sheila and I have always been close friends. Very close.
Ellen, I'd do anything. Humiliate myself, anything, if she'd only let me talk to
her. Do you want me to call her for you, Glenn?
Oh, no. No, I wouldn't want you to do that.
Yes, you would. When you called me this afternoon, I knew that's what you wanted me to do. I'll call her right now.
Well, all right, if it isn't too much trouble.
You know it isn't. Oh, that's a silly thing to do. I started to dial the wrong number. Well, good heavens. Hello? Why, Sheila, what a coincidence. I was just trying to get you. Sheila, what is it?
What's the matter, Ella?
Sheila, I can't understand you. Sheila! Sheila!
Ellen, what's wrong? What's happened?
I don't know exactly. She seemed terrified. Something about someone trying to break into her apartment. And then her voice seemed smothered and we were cut off.
Oh, good Lord, we'd better get over there.
Well, I'll call the police. Maybe they can get there quicker. Oh, I hope you're mistaken, Glenn. Sheila simply has to be all right.
Well, we'll soon find out.
Oh, Glenn, wait.
What?
Down the hall, that patrolman.
Standing guard outside Sheila's door.
Oh, Glenn, do you think...
Come on. Well, we'll let you up. We're friends with Miss Blaine, officer. We're going inside.
Oh, are you? Well, I don't know how you got by downstairs.
Nobody tried to stop us, officer. We simply came right up.
Why can't we see Miss Blaine? What's happened?
Just a minute now. Just a
minute. What's going on in there? What's wrong?
I said hold your horses, young fella.
Wilson, get downstairs and... Who are these people?
Well, sir, that's what I was just...
My name's Ellen Livesey. I called police headquarters about Miss Blaine.
Oh, yes, Miss Livesey. And Captain Hazlitt of the Homicide Division.
Homicide? Captain, what's happened?
Sheila Blaine has 2 bullets in the back of her head. She's dead.
Well, Ellen Livesey, this time it looked as if you won't have even to be a bridesmaid. Your best friend, Sheila Blaine, is dead. What kind of emotion does that call up in you? Are you properly heartbroken? Or is there a faint smile of triumph in your face? The following morning, when Captain Hazlitt called you, Glenn Reed, and Paul Carroll to his office at police headquarters...
Yeah? I'll tell you frankly, we haven't developed a single lead on Miss Blaine's murder since last night. You three seem to have been her closest friends, though, so if there's anything you can tell me...
What do you want to know, Captain?
Well, you've already told me how Miss Blaine called you. By the way, I'd like to thank you for calling headquarters so promptly.
Oh, I thought it was the thing to do, Captain.
As I understand it, you knew Miss Blaine intimately.
Yes, we've been friends since we were in school.
Had her life ever been threatened before?
There was no reason for anybody to threaten her, Captain.
Ah. You were with Miss Livesey when Miss Blaine called.
That's right, at 7:30.
And you, Mr. Carroll, you were at a movie at that time.
Well, from what I've heard, I must have been inside the Regal Theater when it happened.
Miss Blaine made her phone call at 7:30. Apparently, she was killed immediately after that. What time did you get home?
Just after 11. One of your men was waiting for me.
What time did you enter the theater?
Just after 7.
Wasn't that a little early for you to attend a movie?
Well, I don't see why. I hadn't anything to do last evening. Decided to drop in as I was passing by.
Can you prove you were there?
Hey, look here, if you're implying I had anything to do with this,
Someone's been murdered, Mr. Carroll. It's my job to try to find out who did it. I have to start with those who might have done it.
And you mean to say I'm one of them?
Why not?
Well, what motive would I have?
motives are usually and can easily be found.
Does that mean Miss Livesey and Reed are under suspicion, too?
Everyone's under suspicion, Mr. Carroll. We suspect everyone at this stage of the game.
I went to the Regal Theater last night, Hazlitt. I was there from 7 until 10:30.
We can check it anyway. How long had you known Miss Blaine?
6 weeks.
You were, quite friendly?
We were going to be married.
You're a liar.
Just a minute, Mr. Reed.
He's lying. They weren't going to get married.
Glenn, please, please control yourself.
Oh, you just have his word for it. Sheila never told anyone.
Get hold of yourself, Reed. I take it you were, on friendly terms with Miss Blaine, too.
I was in love with her.
And Carroll says he was going to marry her.
I told you he was lying.
You're talking pretty carelessly, Reed. I'd watch myself if I were you.
What are you doing, warning me?
I'm telling you to use a little common sense. Because if you don't,
I'll get what Sheila got.
Why, you dirty
now,
little...
down. Take it easy. You're both under a strain. So is Miss Livesey.
I'm ready to tell you whatever I can, Captain.
No, thanks. I suggest you all go home now.
But I thought you had questions to ask us.
I'll do that later. One at a time.
Then we're free to go now?
Yes. Well, what about Sheila's murder? Is this all you intend to do about it?
We'll go on checking into it, Mr. Reed.
But she's dead. Don't you understand that? Somebody's killed her. Somebody's got to pay for that.
We'll go on checking, Mr. Reed.
Haven't you any ideas or theories at all?
Right now, I'd say the coroner's jury will have to hand in a verdict of homicide by person or persons unknown. We get those cases every so often. Sneak thieves, intruders, surprised by their victims. Kill, get away.
Sheila wasn't killed by any sneak thief.
How do you know?
Well, I don't know for sure, but it couldn't have been that.
Go home and get some sleep, Mr. Reed. I'll call you if I want you. Thanks for your cooperation, everyone.
Thank you, Captain. Paul?
Yes, Ellen?
Will you be good enough to take me home now?
It's all quite a mystery, isn't it, Ellen? The police get nowhere, and soon it's almost forgotten. Yes, even you almost forget it. Because of a new anxiety, a new emotion. Your anger because you haven't seen Paul Carroll since that day he drove you home from the police station. With Sheila out of the way, you thought he'd be around much sooner, didn't you? You thought you could wait. But every day you're away from him. Well, he's very much in your mind the afternoon you face Wilson Andrews in his office. Wilson Andrews, Sheila's attorney.
Before Miss Blaine's will is admitted to probate, Miss Livesey, I'd like you to read it, or if you prefer, I'll read it to you to give you the gist of its contents.
Mr. Andrews, are you telling me I'm one of Sheila's heirs?
Her only heir, my dear.
Oh, no, that isn't possible.
Surely you don't object to...
Oh, but I couldn't. I couldn't take her money.
My dear Miss Livesey, she wanted you to inherit her estate. And surely you can use $30,000.
Well, I don't know what to say.
And she was quite fond of you, Miss Livesey. I'll always remember her great glee in describing how surprised you'd be.
Yes, yes, I can imagine.
If there are any questions you wish to ask, why...
I think not, Mr. Anderson.
Very well.
Oh, yes, yes, there's one question. When will I come into the estate?
Almost immediately, I'd say. I hope this bequest will bring you much happiness, Miss Livesey.
Happiness? Why... Well, yes, perhaps it will. Perhaps it will.
Well, this is a surprise, isn't it, Ellen? Sheila's death has brought you a double benefit. Now you're thinking more than ever of Paul. And now that you've become moderately wealthy, why shouldn't you put your money to good use? The clothes you've never had, a new, bigger apartment, a chance to make Paul Carroll notice you. But instead of Paul, across the luncheon table from you, you find Glenn Reed.
You're looking awfully attractive, Ellen. New hat?
New everything. I felt guilty about it all until all the time I was splurging. Yet I knew it was exactly what Sheila would have wanted me to do. Why did you invite me to lunch, Glenn?
I had to talk to someone. The police still haven't made any arrests. They won't arrest anyone the way they're going about it. It wasn't any sneak thief who killed Sheila.
What makes you feel sure of that?
It couldn't have been. It had to be somebody else.
That isn't enough to go on, Glenn. You'll need evidence of some kind to make the police change their mind.
I don't have any evidence, but I have a pretty good hunch.
You mean you suspect somebody?
Paul Carroll.
Oh, now, Glenn, that's ridiculous.
Is it?
You know Paul can't be guilty. He was at a movie when it happened. The police even found an usher who remembered
him. But that doesn't mean anything. He could have sneaked out a side exit soon after he went inside. Nobody remembered seeing him come out.
But what motive could he have? Why would he want to do it?
Because he found out he wasn't named in Sheila's will. He was counting on her money. Then he found out how she really felt, so he killed her.
But Glenn, by the same token, I'd have a motive for killing her because I knew I'd inherit her money.
But you didn't know you were named as her heir.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Besides, we know neither of us killed her. Carol's the only one who had both the motive and the opportunity.
Glenn, he was at that theater.
Oh, he said.
Well, what are you going to do about it? You're going to go to the police?
I don't know yet. All I know is I won't let Sheila go unavenged. I'm going to find out who killed her. And when I do...
Please, don't do anything rash. Now, promise me you won't do anything you might regret later. Promise me, Glenn.
I'm not promising anything. Oh, don't tell anybody what I've just said. I'll take care of this in my own way.
Well, Ellen, this might be dangerous to your plans. Suppose Glenn does do something to Paul Carroll, the man you love. But wait, Ellen. Suppose Paul did kill Sheila. You wouldn't want the murder of your best friend to go unavenged, would you? Or would you? Love is a very strong emotion, even when it's one-sided. You haven't seen Paul for weeks. He hasn't called you up at all. Never mind. Now you have an excuse, Ellen, an excellent excuse for seeing him.
You like my hat, Paul?
Hmm? Oh, yes. Very nice.
It's the very first time I've worn it.
Oh, is it?
You've never noticed anything I've worn, have you, Paul?
What? What makes you say that?
Oh, no reason.
Why did you want to see me, Ellen?
Oh, because we both loved Sheila. And because I haven't seen you since this happened.
Well, I meant to call you and congratulate you on inheriting her estate, but somehow I didn't get around to it.
Shall I consider myself congratulated now?
If you like.
You've changed, Paul. You're not the same at all.
Maybe I've good reason for it.
Were you so much in love with her?
I don't know.
What does that mean?
Well, you knew Sheila as well as anyone. You know what she was like.
She was beautiful and capricious, unpredictable, provoking.
Mm. You found that out in 15 years. I knew her for 6 weeks. During that time, there were hours when I adored her and moments when I could have killed her. Not a very good choice of words, is it?
I know what you mean, Paul.
Now she's gone, my world's pretty much upside down. And yet if she'd lived, I don't know how long we'd have lasted together.
Were you really going to get married?
Well, I'd have persuaded her to. Then we'd probably have split up in no time, and I'd have been just as broke as I am now.
But you don't sound as if you were really in love, Paul.
I'm not trying to kid anybody, Ellen. I'm just telling you how I felt.
Glenn Reed doesn't think you were in love with Sheila.
Yes, I gathered as much that day at police headquarters.
He thinks you killed her, Paul.
Well, that's insane. What's the matter with that idiot? Is he going around spreading that kind of gossip?
Oh, no, I don't think so. He told me about it yesterday, though. That's the real reason I wanted to see you. I thought I had to warn you.
Has he gone to the police?
Oh, he said the police wouldn't believe him.
You bet they wouldn't.
But please be careful, Paul. Please don't take any chances.
Don't worry. I'll talk to him. Get him straightened out.
Oh, no, please don't go near him. No, that might only stir up trouble. And if anything happened to you, Paul... Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I didn't mean to betray myself. I mean... Oh, it's shameless of me to talk like this. But I'm free to tell you now. I'm in love with you. And if anything
happened... Ellen, don't.
If anything at all happened to you... I could never tell you before. Sheila was my dearest friend. But just like Sheila, the first time I saw you, I fell in love with you, too. Now you know. Oh, I'm a fool for telling you this way. But I don't care. I have money now, Paul. We can share it together. I'm not ashamed of myself. I'm proud. I want to stand up here and tell everyone.
Ellen, I think we'd better go.
Oh, Paul, please. Please let me finish.
It wouldn't do any good, Ellen.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I don't know what else to say.
There's nothing else to say, Paul. Shall we go?
Unrequited love, Ellen. Yes, you can go on hoping, but deep down inside, you know he meant it. He'll never love you. The anguish and torment of that thought gives you many a sleepless night. You go on hoping, but as the days go by, you need more than hope. You must see him, hear his voice. Well, then forget your pride, Ellen. You did once before.
Hello? Oh, hello, Paul. I want to apologize for my stupid behavior last Wednesday. I wanted to call you before, but I couldn't muster enough courage until now. Oh, no, there wasn't anything else you could say. Well, that's awfully sweet of you. Can't we make amends? Well, perhaps if we had dinner together some evening. Oh, I see. Yes, of course. Well, if you'll call me when you get back. Yes, Paul, yes. Goodbye. When you get back. When you get back. Hello, operator. Operator, we were cut off. No, it's all right now. Oh, hello, Paul. Someone must have cut in. I just thought I'd call and see. Oh, I see. Well, I thought now that you're back, you... All right, Paul. Yes, I understand. Goodbye. Too busy. Oh, Paul. I hate you, Paul Carroll. I hate you!
You never thought you'd say those words, did you, Ellen? You didn't remember that love is an emotion very close to hate. But now you know. Paul Carroll doesn't love you, never will love you. He's avoiding you. He's too busy. You hate him now, don't you, Ellen? You're going to take that hate out in action, something drastic, aren't you?
Hello, Glenn Reed? Oh, hello, Glenn. This is Ellen. Yes, I know. I haven't seen you for ages. Could I see you tonight, Glenn? Really important. About Paul Carroll. No, I can't tell you now. Can you come to my apartment tonight? Oh, say 8:00. All right, I'll be expecting you.
Yes, you're going to do something drastic, aren't you, Ellen? So you work fast, and you're ready when Glenn arrives at 8.
Why, hello, Glenn. Do come in.
Thanks.
You haven't seen my new apartment before, have you?
No, I haven't. It's pretty swank. Said you had something to tell me about Paul Carroll, Ellen. What is it?
Well, please sit down first. Make me uncomfortable
standing
that way.
I think I'll stand. What's happened?
Well, it's a little hard to tell. Especially after I wouldn't believe you.
My suspicions about Carroll, you mean?
Yes. I saw Paul several weeks ago, just before he went out of town. He acted rather strangely at that time. Then I talked to him on the phone today, and... Well, now I'm glad to think you were right. Something he said aroused my suspicions.
What was that?
Well, we were chatting casually, something about radio shows, when Paul mentioned a certain program. And he suddenly changed the subject. Later, I realized why. He talked about a program that was on the air while he was supposed to be at the theater the night Sheila was murdered.
Are you sure of that, Ellen?
Well, I wouldn't have called you if I weren't. First, I thought of calling the police, but then I could see the evidence would seem so flimsy to Captain Hazlitt.
Yes, you're right.
If we could see Paul alone, just the two of us with him, and trick him into confessing.
How?
Well, I could invite him to the apartment tonight. I'd tell him you're here, and then when he arrives...
That wouldn't do any good, Ellen.
I think it would. I'll give him a ring.
I wouldn't do that.
Nonsense. We both want to avenge Sheila's death, don't we?
But if you'll only listen to me.
Oh, always making that mistake. I keep dialing Sheila's old number. Oh, good heavens, that startled me. Hello? Oh, well, hello, Paul. I was just about to call you. Yes, I wanted to invite you over. Oh, don't say you can't come. Well, I suppose I could. Mm-hmm. All right, Paul. Yes, I'll be there. Goodbye. Well, that wasn't hard. He won't come here, but he'll be glad to see me at his place. He won't expect to see you with me, so we may be able to surprise him.
I don't think so, Ellen.
Why not?
We're not going to visit Carol.
I thought we were agreed.
Let me have the phone, Ellen.
Glenn, what in the
world? Let me have it.
Really, Glenn? Very well. What in the world are you... Glenn, I demand an explanation.
Why don't you answer? Oh, there's no use stalling, Ellen. I watched you dial. You see, you didn't dial Sheila's old number. You faked that call to Carol.
That's absurd. I don't know what you're talking about.
Don't you? Well, listen. There's nobody on the line, you see? Because the four numbers I just dialed make your own phone ring. You didn't talk to Paul Carroll just now.
Really, Glenn? I'm not going to sit here and
you
let you tell...
You couldn't have talked to Carroll. I know that, Ellen. You see, I've already killed him.
The unexpected can be a physical blow, can't it, Ellen? Almost like the promise of death itself. Glenn's words completely upset your elaborate little scheme. You stand in horror as it crumbles about you.
Glenn, you can't be serious. I can't believe it.
Oh, yes. I've been following him for weeks because I thought he'd killed Sheila. I saw the two of you in that restaurant several weeks ago, and I saw you go into his apartment earlier this season.
Oh, no. No, you couldn't.
I went in after you left. He was sitting in his chair, his back to me. Crept up behind him, a heavy metal lamp from an end table in my hand, and then no one saw me go in or out of his flat.
Oh, Glenn, you fool. You fool.
I came here to tell you about it before giving myself up, but then you faked that call from him. Puzzled me at first. But not now, Ellen. Ellen, you faked that call from Sheila, too. You killed Sheila.
Oh, Glenn, listen. You? Listen to me. Let me explain.
Answer me. I know you killed her, but why? How could you do it?
Because she'd always had everything I didn't have. Money, beauty, popularity. And then Paul came along, and she got him, too. I couldn't let her take him, so I... Yes, I killed her. I killed her. And then I made my own phone ring while you were with me. I learned how when I was an operator.
You killed Sheila, your friend. Knowing all the time I talked to you about her that night that she was already dead. If it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't have killed Carol.
Glenn, let me tell you. You didn't kill him. He was already dead.
You killed him, too.
Don't come near me. I shot him, and I made it look like suicide. As if he killed Sheila. We'd both have been avenged if you hadn't meddled. You meddled. We'd have gotten away with it.
You won't get away with anything again, Ellen.
What do you mean? What do you mean? What are you doing?
I told you if I ever found Sheila's murderer, I'd avenge her.
Glenn! No! No! No!
Valley 103.1.
It is called After Dinner Story. The author is Cornell Woolrich, the radio adapter Robert L. Richards. And so, with the performance of Otto Kruger as Mr. Hardecker, who told this extraordinary after-dinner story, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Mr. Hardecker's residence? I believe I'm expected for dinner.
Your name, sir?
Kenshaw's name.
Very good, sir. Mr. Hardacre? Mr. Kenshaw, sir.
Ah, number one. Good evening, Mr. Kenshaw.
Is this where Mr. Hardacre lives? My name is Lambert.
Mr. Hardacre? Mr. Lambert.
Number two.
My name is Prendergast. I think I...
Mr. Hardacre? Mr. Prendergast.
Number three.
Mackenzie, to name.
Mr. Hardacre? Mr. Mackenzie.
Number four. One, two, three, four. So you're all here, gentlemen?
Yes.
Then suppose we go into dinner. After dinner, I shall tell you why you are here, what I have in mind. In fact, I shall tell you in the form of a story. A sort of after-dinner story. Well, gentlemen, did you enjoy your dinner?
Yeah, well.
Then, if you'll excuse me for just a moment, I have certain instructions to give the servants, and after that, I shall rejoin you. I can't be long.
Certainly. Well, what did that crack mean? Certain instructions to the servant.
How should I know?
I don't like the looks of the whole thing. Why all the mystery?
Well, I suggest that you have patience, Mr. Prendergast. Mr. Hardacre clearly intends to tell us in his own good time.
Yeah. And another thing. I don't eat in those fancy Park Avenue joints as a rule myself, but I've seen them in the movies. They always pass the food around to everybody. They don't bring it out of the kitchen already on your plate and just hand it to you.
Well, what possible difference can that make?
Well, I don't know, but I know it ain't right.
Oh. None of it's right. Why does a man invite four perfect strangers to dinner? What is this thing he has in mind for us he keeps talking about?
Well, I know he says he'll make it worth our while, and I can use a little of that worth your while stuff, the way business has been lately.
Obviously, the connection between us is that we were all in that elevator a year ago.
Oh, what of it? There's no mystery about that. The police cleared that up the very next day.
Maybe Mr. Hardacre doesn't think so.
Sorry to have kept you, gentlemen.
Now, suppose we get down to business.
Mr. Hardacre, none of us wish to seem rude, but we were just wondering what this business is all about.
You have had... you had come to the obvious conclusion, of course, that it has to do with my son?
Well, yeah.
I don't see why we're all sorry, naturally, but that's all over and done
yes,
with, and I...
Yes, almost. But there are one or two little details that I thought you gentlemen might help me to clarify.
Oh, sure.
Oh, well.
Fine. Yeah. Well, then, if you don't mind, I know you must remember most of it, but it's almost a year ago. I'd like to go over the whole story from the beginning.
Well, that's all right.
Well, it was just before 5 in the afternoon on August 30th of last year when the matter which concerns us here this evening had its beginning. And on that day, and at that time, all four of you, perfect strangers, who had never seen each other before in your lives, found yourselves, for personal and business reasons of your own, on various floors of the Norfolk Building in Midtown Manhattan, waiting for the express elevator to take you to the lobby. The first passengers were on the 21st floor.
21, going down, please. Express car, going down.
There are now three men in the elevator. The operator, Mr. Kenshaw and Mr. Lambert, who had gotten on at the 21st floor.
18. Going down, please. Face the doors, please. Going down.
Now there are five men in the car. Mr. Prendergast and Mr. Mackenzie had entered the elevator at the 18th floor.
15. Express car to the lobby. Going down, please.
Say hello to Eleanor for me.
You bet. Bye, Dad.
Bye.
Six men in the elevator. The last to enter, I had accompanied to the elevator door myself. He was my son.
These things drop pretty fast.
Too fast for me.
Hey, this baby is moving.
Look! We can't stop it.
We're out of control!
Stop it!
Look out, we're going to hit. Oh, get on.
Anybody got a match?
I think my leg's broken. Get me out of here. I got a wife and kids. Somebody get me out of here. Get me
Shut
out of here.
Shut up a minute, can't you? You're not the only one with a wife and kids. Has anybody got a match? I've got to get this door open.
Yeah. I don't have
it. I'm liable to suffocate in here. These things are practically airtight. Yeah. Where's the operator?
The operator, he's over here. I can feel the braid on his coat against my hand.
Oh. Hey, what about it, bud? You got a match so I can see what I'm doing here? Hey, operator.
He's dead. Dead? Why doesn't somebody come? What's the matter with him? Why did they come?
Pipe down, will you? Pipe down. There. I got it. Now we'll get a little air anyway.
Oh. There's a light up there somewhere.
Yeah. I can hear voices. There, you hear them?
Help! Help!
Say, there's no use yelling your head off. They know we're down here.
I wish my leg didn't hurt so bad.
Oh, see, try wrapping your shirt around it tight. It may stop some of the pain.
Thanks.
Now
what?
Nothing. Just sit and wait. That's all.
Why don't they hurry? What are they waiting for? Why don't they hurry?
Take it easy. You could be worse off.
Worse off?
Yeah. Like this poor guy, the operator. He's dead.
And so you waited. 6 men, 5 living, 1 dead. I know how it must have been for all of you, the minutes dragging by, there in the darkness, with nothing to do but wait.
How's your leg?
Better. How long do you suppose we've been down here?
No, it's hard to tell.
Maybe they think we're all dead. Maybe they're just taking their time.
Don't worry. They heard you hollering, all right.
But I... Gee, the poor guy. I wonder if he had any kids.
The operator? Yeah.
I often wonder sometimes what would happen if one of these things ever slipped. Well, now you know. I'll never ride in one again. So he's going to walk up 68 stories to the Rainbow Room. I don't go to the Rainbow Room.
Oh, I'm certainly glad my father didn't get on this car with me. He was going to, but he changed his mind.
Wish I'd changed my mind. You know, if I hadn't gone back to make a phone call, I'd have been on another car.
What's the use of wishing? Okay, it's happened, and here we are.
Listen, there they are. They're going to get us out.
Yeah. Hello? Hello up there?
Yeah, we're coming to you. Take it easy.
Hurry, can't you? Hurry! Hurry!
Yeah, we are. We'll hurry. Anybody hurry?
Yeah, one guy's dead.
We'll be through to you in a minute. Okay, Roger, let it on now.
Look at that light up there.
Settling torches.
Yeah, they're going to cut a hole in the roof. What a racket.
Oh, I'm nearly deaf already.
Listen, you guys. We're coming through, see? Watch out for sparks. Sketch your rides and stand back against the wall.
Okay.
I never knew those things made so much noise.
It's because we're closed in.
No! What was that?
I don't know.
I thought I heard somebody holler.
Yeah, so did I.
Must have been one of those guys up above.
Those sparks are enough to blind you.
Well, go look at them. They will blind you.
One went right by in front of my face, right across the car.
They couldn't have. They're dropping down.
Did you see it? It was awful bright.
Oh, just a reflection. Don't look at it.
I guess they got it cut through.
Phew, yeah. Couldn't have stood much more of that.
They're pulling off the top. It won't be long now.
All right. Stand clear down there. I'm going to jump down.
There, cop.
And no cop ever looked lovelier.
All right. Pass them ropes down now. Okay, hold it. All right. Who's first now? Who's the worst hurt of you all? How about this fella?
Now that's the operator. He's dead.
Hey, look. Those other two guys are both passed out.
Yeah, shocking.
Officer, I've got to get out of here. I feel pretty bad.
Hey, hold your horses. There's nothing wrong with you.
But I...
That man's got a broken leg.
Who's got a broken leg?
I have, I think.
All right. Can you sit in this rope sling here?
I'm trying.
Now, hang on with both your hands.
I'll be all right.
Okay. Pull him up.
Well,
So long, fellas.
Take care of that leg.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks. My name's Lambert.
And mine's Mackenzie. Maybe we'll run into each other sometime.
Yeah. Well, so long.
All right, let me have that rope now. Well, who's next now?
Well, maybe you better take those two guys that passed out. They might be hurt.
Why, sure. How about this young fella?
Sure. He's got a little blood on him, hasn't he?
He has that.
Glass from the light fixtures, I guess.
Well, I don't think it's serious.
You don't, eh?
No, he seemed to be all right.
Well, whatever he seemed to be, he's not now. This man is dead.
Dead? Oh, but he can't be.
Look here, my lad, you don't seem to realize that you've come through a pretty serious accident.
I know, but he can't be dead. We heard him talking just a few minutes ago, isn't that right?
Yes, I heard him.
Well, sure, he was talking to us here in the dark. He said something about being glad his father wasn't on this elevator.
I can't help what he said or what you heard him say. This man is dead.
My son, who had survived the original accident without apparent injury, was dead. You gentlemen were more fortunate. You lived. 5 days later, you four met again at the police headquarters. About 2:30 on a Friday afternoon. The last to arrive was Mr. Lambert.
Here, Mr. Lambert.
Thanks.
Hello there.
Hey, how's the leg?
Pretty good. Mr. Lambert?
That's right.
I'm Chief Inspector McMahon.
How do?
We'll just take a seat there. Well, we're all here now. Mr. Kenshaw, yes. Mr. Pendergast, Mr.
Yes.
McKenzie,
that's
Mr.
Me.
Lambert.
Yes, sir.
Well, now, as I told each of you over the phone, I won't keep you very long. I just wanted to ask a few routine questions about that business of the elevator the other day.
Well, what's the matter? Something phony about it?
Not for our money. It's an open and shut case. Suicide.
Suicide?
Yeah. You mean the operator wanted to bump himself off so he could...
No, not the operator. He died of a fractured skull. Young Hardiker, we're interested in. His father's been raising a row, so we said we'd investigate, but...
I still don't get it.
Wesley Hardiker was killed by a .32 caliber bullet through the heart.
What?
You couldn't have... You mean he killed himself right in that car with all of us...
What else? He wasn't shot when he walked in, and he was dead when we brought him out. Unless one of you killed him.
No.
Any of you know him?
No.
Well, then there you are. Even the father had to admit that as far as he knew, his son had never seen any of you before in his life.
But it don't make sense.
What don't make sense?
Well, I mean, a guy shooting himself in an elevator with four other people that nobody didn't even know it.
Did any of you hear the shot?
Not before they started the blowtorches. I can swear to that. Couldn't have heard one anyway.
Yeah, you see?
Hey. Wait a minute.
Did you hear something?
No. But McKenzie, remember I said when I was laying on the floor of the elevator that I thought I saw a spark from one of those blowtorches that went across the car instead of falling down?
That's right.
Anybody else see it?
The blowtorches were absolutely blinding. You couldn't see a...
How about you, Mr. Kenshaw?
I'm afraid that I fainted or something silly like that. I'm not a very strong person.
Well, it was probably the gunshot, all right. Nothing very mysterious about it. The gun belonged to young Hardiker, licensed in his name, and had only his own fingerprints on it.
Well, maybe I shouldn't ask, but why did he do it?
The official verdict is suicide while of unsound mind.
He seemed all right. He talked to us perfectly sensibly just before it happened.
Just goes to show. You never can tell, can you?
Oh, he'd always been nervous and highly strung. We got that out of his father. The strain of being down in that black pit was just too much for him, that's all.
Oh, but what a terrible thing. To break down just as we were about to be rescued.
Yep, it's too bad. Boys seem to have everything to live for, too. But we find that sort of thing all the time.
The noise, I suppose. I've read of cases of nervous breakdown caused by noise.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I guess I don't need to keep you gentlemen any longer.
Well, I'm certainly glad there were no complications.
Oh, don't worry. If one of you had anything to do with it, you'd be back in the cell right now.
That was almost a year ago. Last week, each of you received a phone call from me. I can well understand and sympathize with the fact that you were somewhat astonished, perhaps a little suspicious of what you heard. I don't doubt that most of you debated at some length in your minds the advisability of accepting my invitation at all. You, for instance, Mr. McKenzie, you are married, as I remember. I imagine that you talked quite seriously with your wife about the whole affair. I phoned your home, I believe, at about 8:30 last Monday evening.
Yes? This is Mr. McKenzie speaking. Well, I'm sorry, but I don't seem to place you.
Oh,
of course, Mr. Hardiker. Well, frankly, I don't see the point. You don't know me, and I don't know you. Yeah? Yeah, I see. Well, all right, Mr. Hardiker. I'll be there. That's a funny name.
Who was it, dear?
His name is Hardiker. Father of that boy who killed himself in the elevator last year.
Oh? Well, what did he want?
He wants me to come to dinner with him on Saturday at his home.
Well, how lovely. He's a very important man, isn't he? Did he ask both of us?
No. As a matter of fact, he's asking the four men who were in that elevator with his son when he died.
What a strange idea. Seems sort of gruesome to me.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Didn't he say anything?
Oh, he said quite a lot.
Well, what did he say?
I was just thinking.
Oh, now, please, Stephen, don't sit there and be so tantalizing. What did he say?
Well, he said something about his son's estate. Seems his son had quite a lot of money in his own right. The old man said he didn't need it, and weren't any other relations, and... Well, he sort of hinted that he thought it might be a good idea to split it up between the four men who were with his son in his last moments of life, as he put it.
Why, Stephen, how wonderful! Why aren't you excited? How much is it? Do you suppose it's a lot of money?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why, it might be several thousand dollars. It might be several hundred thousand dollars. Oh, Stephen, what's the matter with you?
Just such a crazy thing to do, that's all.
Don't see that that makes any difference. If a man wants to do a nice, kind, generous thing...
Look, honey, if it was generosity, he'd give it to charity. If it was a sort of memorial to his son, he'd set up a scholarship or build a hospital or something.
Well,
the old man was pretty broken up about it when it happened. I remember reading something about his being in a sanitarium for a while afterwards. And he never did believe the verdict of suicide. Police have not told us that at the time. How do I know he doesn't think one of us killed the boy?
Oh, that's absurd.
Well, all right. But anybody who's crazy enough to divide up a wad of dough between four perfect strangers is crazy enough to think a perfect stranger killed his son.
Oh, why, that...
Maybe he thinks we all did it. Maybe he's wacky and has some crazy idea about revenge and is going to use the dough as bait to get us all together.
I hadn't thought of it like that. Perhaps you ought not to go.
I already said I won. Oh, anyway, maybe it's on the level.
Stephen, do you still have that gun you used to have when you worked at the bank?
Yeah, I have it there.
I think you ought to take it with you Saturday night.
Honey, I think you've got something there. I think that's a very good idea.
And so, gentlemen, I'm quite gratified that you all saw fit to accept my rather unique invitation, and that we are all here together this evening. By the way, Mr. McKenzie, I'm afraid I must ask you to give me that gun that you brought along.
Oh, that's it.
And, Mr. McKenzie, you will notice that one of my servants who is standing in the door directly behind you has got you covered, is the phrase, I believe.
Mm. Mm. Okay.
Thank you.
How did you know?
Why, the butler sort of patted all your pockets when you removed your coats, but aside from that, I've spent most of my waking hours during the past year looking into the backgrounds of all you gentlemen.
So I was right about this setup after all.
Now, look here, Mr. Hardecker. I came here tonight in perfectly good faith. I even canceled a very important business appointment.
With Mr. Joseph Donahue, Celluloid Products.
Yeah.
All right, let's cut out the mystery. What's this all about?
Yes, really, what's Hardecker, the idea?
No, wait a minute. One moment, gentlemen, one moment.
But
I didn't ask you up here under false pretenses. I fully intend to divide my son's estate precisely as I suggested over the phone. I sincerely hope you don't resent my investigation of your backgrounds.
Well, gee, Mr. Hardecker, my background isn't much, I guess, but...
Perhaps we all owe you an apology, Mr. Hardecker, but you must admit the whole thing's been a little strange.
It has indeed been very strange. I think, however, that phase of the matter is about over. Now, before we get down to business, there is one detail that I'd like you to help clear me up.
Well, sure, what do you
think? Can I bring it in now, sir?
If you please. Is it well mixed?
Yes, sir.
In the center of the table. Thank you, Johnson.
Now, please see that we are not disturbed on any account whatsoever.
Yes, sir.
Hey, that looks good. What is it?
Oh, it's got quite a number of things in it. White of egg, mustard, milk.
It sounds like an antidote for poison.
It is an antidote for poison.
And what?
Gentlemen, there is a murderer in this room. One of you killed my son and hasn't paid for it yet.
Oh, don't be a fool. The coroner's verdict was suicide.
This is not a discussion, Mr. McKenzie. This is an execution.
I'm getting out of here.
There is a man with a gun outside each door. You'll find them very unreceptive to that idea, Mr. Prendergast.
Sit down. He's got us.
Well, I...
The only thing we can do is try to talk a little sense.
I'm not open to arguments, Mr. McKenzie. One of you killed my son. I know who that man is. It's taken me a year to find out, but I now know. The food that man ate tonight was poison.
Yeah, no, but...
In 10 minutes, he'll drop dead.
You can't take the law into your own hands that way.
Unfortunately, the law demands a very specific type of evidence. The police, whom I consulted repeatedly, do not believe it possible to get a conviction on the evidence I have. And therefore, the conviction must come tonight.
Wait, you wouldn't dare. You couldn't kill a man in cold blood that way.
There is an alternative, Mr. Prendergast. Hmm? It is there in the center of the table. The antidote.
Oh.
The murderer may either confess his crime by drinking the contents of that bowl, or he may keep silent and go to his death here tonight. Privately executed for what cannot be publicly proved.
They could send you to the chair for that.
I am quite aware of that contingency, Mr. Crenshaw, and quite willing to accept the consequences. But the murderer will have gone to his death before me.
But how do we know you poisoned the right...
The murderer knows, Mr. Prendergast. The rest need have no fear.
Hey, I think the guy's crazy. Maybe he poisoned all of us.
Look, Mr. Hardiker. This whole thing is insane. Nobody killed your son.
As for that, we shall shortly see, Mr. McKenzie. The man who killed my son has approximately 7 minutes to live.
7 minutes? It's me. I know it's me. He's poisoned. My whole insides are on fire. It's me.
Don't fall for it unless you're sure. The whole thing may be a gag.
I assure you, nothing has ever been more serious, Mr. McKenzie.
I don't feel so good myself.
Neither do I. Probably just indigestion. After dinner, a story like this is enough to give indigestion to a horse.
No kidding. Hey, supposing this guy's a maniac. Suppose he just made it all up in his own head and poisoned all of us.
Listen, Mr. Hardiker. Let me just tell you this. If I come out of this alive, I'm going to beat your brains out of it. It's the last thing I do.
I can't stand it. Mr. Hardiker, I didn't do it. I swear I didn't. I didn't do it. I didn't.
Shut up.
5 more minutes.
Hey, I feel awful. Maybe we all ought to take some of that stuff, just in case.
Yeah, that's it. We'll all take it.
Yeah. Who'll take it first?
Unfortunately, gentlemen, there's only enough antidote for one.
Even if you're right, Hardiker, this is no way to do.
This is my way.
You're crazy, I tell you, crazy!
Perhaps. Have you a son?
Look! Kenshaw!
Will it save me?
Well, gentlemen, now you know.
All right. All right, what do I care? I killed him. And I do it again. I hated him. Hated him. All my life. In school, in college, he never even knew that I existed. He was too good for someone like me. And he had everything. Money, everything. And he married the girl that I loved. She didn't know how I felt. I never told her. And then she died. Pneumonia, they said. She wouldn't have died if she hadn't married him. So I killed her. I find it in the open. And then it fell. It fell. It was as though God had delivered it into my hands. It came to me there in the dark. I choked him, and then he got out his gun, and I put my hand over his, and I turned it against him, and fired. But I'm glad.
Look, you...
Help him, somebody. Help him.
Here. Hold up his head.
Yeah. Never mind. He's dead.
It didn't work in time.
You killed him, Hardiker.
No, I didn't.
I tell you, he's dead.
Yes, I know. But what he drank was not the antidote. It was the poison.
Poison?
You see, I didn't exactly know which of you killed my son. I only knew that one of you must have. And so Robert Kenshaw convicted himself in front of all of you and was his own executioner.
But then he was never poisoned at all until...
Until he drank the contents of that bowl.
Gee.
I shall divide the estate, gentlemen, as I promised. Meanwhile, you may call the police if you like. Let the law and divine providence decide whether this man died by my hand or by the guilt that lay upon his own soul.
Wife says to me, let's not drive the old coupe, hitch up once again, the one horse open sleigh. The horse was awful mad, if he could talk he'd say, you'll be sorry you hitched me to a one horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingling all the way. It ain't fun like it used to be in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingling all the way. I should have worn long underwear in that one-horse open sleigh.
Sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.